Okay. So let's talk a little bit about Pas Yisrael. Now, it's very interesting. If you look around, it's one of those things, I guess, in the 21st century, you look around at all of the restaurants, and everything is Pas Yisrael, Chalav Yisrael. Chalav Yisrael we spoke about, right? Chalav Yisrael we spoke about in the past. But everything is Pas Yisrael, Chalav Yisrael. Many things are Yashan, right? We didn't speak about Yashan per se here, but I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think one of the Berkowitz boys spoke about it last Pesach, I think, if I'm not mistaken. But we can always review and talk about Yashan also. But it's one of those things which, now, again, the restaurants and the kashrus agencies want to be able to cater to everyone. So they have, why not do things as mehudar as possible, so to speak, and that way we'll catch everyone. So one of the issues that we have is Pas Yisrael. Now, Pas Yisrael, in reality, all of these terms, Chalav Yisrael and Pas Yisrael, are really a little bit of, they kind of misrepresent what's going on, because in essence, what we have here are prohibitions, right? So really, in the Gemara, it's referred to, or really in the Mishnah, as we'll see in a minute, it's referred to as Chalav Akum, instead of Chalav Yisrael, right? The prohibition is Chalav Akum. The prohibition is to have milk that was produced by a non-Jew without any Jewish supervision. So we call it Chalav Yisrael in the positive. But in the sense, the prohibition, which is where this comes from, is called Chalav Akum. And the same thing with Pas. We call it Pas Yisrael, but it's really Pas Akum. It's like Bishul Akum. So everybody, Bishul Akum, everybody knows. Nobody says Bishul Yisrael, right? Nobody talks about Bishul Yisrael. That's obviously a little bit of a more basic requirement, as we spoke about. But when it comes to Pas, we refer to it as Pas Yisrael. But really, the prohibition is the prohibition of Pas Akum. And if you look at the first source, which is the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, and this is the same Mishnah that mentions Chalav, if you look, Ve'ilu Dvarim Shalovde Kochavim Asurim Ve'in Yisura Nisar Hana, right, the following things are prohibited, but you're not prohibited to benefit from them, you're just prohibited to consume them. Chalav Shechalva Ovid Kochavim Ve'in Yisura Ro'ehu, and that was the line that we read in regards to Chalav Yisrael, right? If you have milk that was milked from a cow and a Jew did not watch the milking, Ve'hapas, and bread, and that's the important line for us, and that's why I underlined it. Ve'hashem and shelahem and oil, which is a little bit of a different topic. And then if you look a few words later, ve'hashlakos, which is bishalakum, and that we discussed also. So in this Mishnah, you really have all of these prohibitions of the akum, what we call the ma'achale akum, right? The akum food prohibitions, and this is, by the way, a whole course of study. People who are, in yeshivos or in... or even post yeshivas, people want to study. They want to study the laws of ma'achale akum. They study the laws of bishul akum and chalav akum and pas akum. It's all one, one broad umbrella of halachos. But tonight we're going to focus on pas akum. And if we think about, what's the reason behind this prohibition of pas akum? So you can probably guess by now, having already seen bishul akum. We've already discussed bishul akum and chalav akum. But the Chalav Akum was a little bit different. We know we had a little bit of a different concern. But certainly when it came to Bishul Akum, and this is where Rashi says it really in source number two. So Rashi mentions that what's the idea, the reasoning behind this prohibition? He's going on the word in the Mishnah of a Hashlakos, which is referring to Bishul Akum. But he writes, Kol Davar, Shebishlo v'kochav v'afilu b'kli tahor, anything that's cooked by a non-Jew, even in a kosher utensil, even in my kosher pot, but if it's cooked by a non-Jew, it's problematic. And writes Rashi, v'kulhu, all of these prohibitions that are mentioned in the Mishnah, mishum chasnus. They're all because of chasnus. They're all because we're worried about intermarriage. Right? Again, we're worried that if we're a little bit too familiar, a little bit too friendly, a little bit too congenial with our non-Jewish neighbors, so, they have a nice little girl, and we have a nice little boy, and the next thing you have an intermarriage, which we're trying to avoid. So that's what Rashi says the reasoning is. Now, it is clear... in the Shulchan Aruch, that this prohibition applies even in a case where you don't really have a suspicion of intermarriage. So, for example, the Shulchan Aruch writes in source number 3, Asru Chachamim Le'echol Pashal Amamim Ovdei Kochavim, that the rabbis prohibited us from eating non-Jewish bread, literally, bread that was baked by non-Jews. Mishum Chasnos, he quotes this reason of Rashi, it's because of intermarriage. And even if you have some situation where for whatever reason there is no concern about chasnus, nevertheless, usur. And this relates to what we've spoken about in the past, that even though Chazal identified one particular reason for a decree that they made, for a gzera that they made, but that doesn't mean necessarily that they were revealing to you all of the reasons. Right, it's not an exhaustive list of reasons. They gave you one reason. There might be other reasons. There might be more mystical reasons. There might be metaphysical reasons. And therefore, even if the reason that Chazal gave does not apply anymore, does not apply in a particular situation, usually, and there are some exceptions, but usually we'll say what the Gemara refers to as lo plug, which means lo plug. Lo plug means that we don't distinguish. We don't differentiate between cases. Right? Once Chazal made the prohibition, so we apply that prohibition in all cases. Whether the reason applies, whether the reason doesn't apply, it doesn't really matter in the end. The Shulchan Aruch does mention at the end there that this prohibition of Pas Akum only applies to things that are baked from the five grains. Right? So wheat, barley, oats, rye, and spelt. Those five grains, those are the five grains that Halacha recognizes as things that are considered Pas. Anything that's made from another grain. So if you have corn, for example, you make cornbread. Or millet. I don't know if people make anything with millet, but you make something with millet flour, so it would not. The prohibition of pas akum would not apply to that. It's not called pas, and therefore it's not. There's no problem of pas akum here.
Doesn't that throw out the window the argument of we're really worried about intermarrying?
Yes and no. So we're worried about intermarrying, but Chazal had to prohibit. In other words, Chazal had to establish certain things. If you're making a decree, it has to be concrete. Right? Like, you know, the rules have to be very specific. Rules have to be concrete.
A guy can't cook for you. Can't make food for you.
Right. So in general, so we have the concept of bishul akum, for example. But when it came to baking, they prohibited pas. These were the things that were most commonly made, and that's why they prohibited it. They didn't come out with a prohibition that you can't have baked goods. I mean, listen, it's likely that there were no, you know, people didn't make things with corn back then. And Chazal just said, it applies to the five grains, that's what's called pas, and that's it. So if they want to bake something with something else, okay, meaning, and any situation which is an uncommon situation, Chazal were not concerned that intermarriage would arise from a once in a blue moon type of situation. Regular situations, regular scenarios, that's what Chazal were concerned about. In general, by the way, it's a general rule. Very often you find in the Gemara that Chazal only made gzeros in common cases. If you had a case that was very uncommon or very very rare, so Chazal wouldn't make a gzera. They wouldn't make a decree in that type of a case. Only in common cases. That's the general rule. Okay. And the Taz also writes, he brings an example. Taz on this Shulchan Aruch in source number 4 writes, what would be a case where there's no concern of intermarriage? Let's say I'm married, so I don't have to be concerned about intermarriage. I'm already married. I'm happily married to my wife. And let's say I don't have any children yet. I don't have any children. So if I'm married and I don't have any children, so what are we concerned about? What intermarriage are we concerned about? If I have a little boy and they have a little girl, so then we're concerned. But let's say there's no kids in the picture. Let's say they don't have any kids. Right? So then there's no concern of intermarriage. The Taz says, even in that type of a case, where there are no children and everybody's married, so there's no real concern per se of intermarriage in this scenario. Nevertheless, it's going to be prohibited. The Taz in source number 5 also explains that the reason why we say specifically the five grains is because those are things that are chashuv. Right? If you look at source number 5, he writes, Shezehu davar chashuv, umevi lidei kiruv hadas. And this kiruv das. And this was something that we saw in the context of bishul akum also. That we had certain cases where bishul akum applied and certain cases where bishul akum didn't apply. So if you remember from bishul akum, we discussed that if you have something, for example, which can be eaten raw, so that's not subject to the laws of bishul akum. Or if you have something that's not ola al shulchan melachim, it's not fit to be brought at a royal table or at a state dinner or something like that. So again, it's not subject to the laws of bishul akum. Why? Because the real concern of intermarriage and chasnus is over something that's significant. We're not concerned that if you share a bag of potato chips or something like that, that it's going to lead to intermarriage. We're concerned that if you make a steak dinner, that's something more intimate. That's going to lead to problems down the line. And that's why he says specifically the baked goods made from the five grains. Those are the things that are prohibited. What happens if you have a mixture? Right, let's say I make something with a mixture of wheat flour and corn flour. So how do I judge that? So the Prima Gadim in source number 6 writes that you go by the rov, right, which is very often the case. You go by the majority. So whatever the majority is, if the majority is wheat flour, then it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem of pasakum. If the majority is corn flour, then it won't be such a problem. Okay. So just like we had when it came to Bishulakim and Cholavakim and all these prohibitions, if you stop here, things look pretty bad. Right? If you stop here, things look pretty bad. The Mishnah says pasakum is aser. By the way, pasakum, that means fry hafers, entimins, right? Not just bread. Any baked goods that are considered even pas habo bekisnin, right? Baked goods like cake and cookies would all be included in this, right? Can you imagine? Can you imagine Judaism without entimins, right? Can you imagine the, you know, Freihoffers? What would you do without these things? So, but this would all be Wonder Bread. I mean, all these things would be subject to pasakum, right? If we were careful about pasakum, and we're not. Now, you might say, one second, Rabbi, don't we look for a hechsher? Right, so even on Entenmann's, it has an OU, it has a Hechsher, you know, on Freihoffers, there's a Chafkei, or whatever it is. So we have a Hechsher, so what are we concerned about? Right? So the answer is that the Hechsher only tells you that there are no non-kosher ingredients in this item. Freihoffers does not include any non-kosher ingredients in their standard bread, and that's why there's a Hechsher from whichever kosher's agency. Entenmann's and most of their stuff, they don't have any non-kosher ingredients, and therefore, they have a Hechsher. But pas akum doesn't mean treif bread. It could be totally kosher bread. Pas akum means bread that was baked by a non-Jew. So that's problematic. So therefore, if Entenmann's, even if it has all kosher ingredients, but if a Jew is not involved in the baking process, even if there's a mashgiach who pops into the plant once in a while to make sure that everything is going as planned and nobody is, and they haven't changed the ingredients or anything like that. Even if you have a mashiach, it doesn't help you to make it pas Yisrael. It only helps you to ensure that there are kosher ingredients. But if it was baked by a non-Jew, that's pasakum. So we'll learn a little bit how to handle that. But that's the idea. So now comes the tour and offers us a little bit of room for leniency here. And comes the tour, and he writes based on Chazal, but he writes in source number 7. Ugzeiras hapas lo nispashta bechol hamakomos. That this gzeira of pas akum, this decree that we're not allowed to eat bread that was baked by a non-Jew, that did not spread and did not take everywhere. Not everyone accepted this gzeira. Okay, now it sounds like a little bit of a strange concept. Right? What do you mean it wasn't accepted? But we find this other places in the Gemara where Chazal made a gzeira, the rabbis made a decree, because they saw, you know, some need for that decree. But sometimes the decree didn't catch. It didn't take. Either it was too difficult for people, right, or whatever the case might be. And therefore, over time, the rabbis saw that, well, you know, we made this decree, but people are not really listening to it. And therefore, very often what they did in those cases was they repealed the decrees. If they saw that the decree was not something that people could really do, they repealed it or they modified it in some way. Again, that doesn't mean that if the rabbis say something, you can opt out and just, you know, let's sign a petition, let's get as many people as we can to opt out of this decree so that the rabbis will just repeal it. You know, it's not like a great approach. If the rabbis saw fit to institute it, it probably was something worthwhile. But nevertheless, sometimes, right, even the rabbis recognize that, listen, maybe we didn't assess the general population accurately enough. It's a very hard thing to do, to assess, you know, thousands of people. So we thought, you know, this was something that they could handle. Turns out that it's not something they could handle, right? I'll just bring you a contemporary, not quite a contemporary application, but a contemporary similar type of scenario when it comes to internet. So very often, you know, if you roll back, let's say 5-10 years, so in the more Haredi community, what everybody was saying, it's usser, it's usser, it's usser, you can't have internet. And what happened was they saw that over time it was becoming less and less possible for the entire tzibur, for the entire, you know, community to really abide by that decree, because people needed exceptions if they were in school and people needed exceptions when they were working, and pretty soon, you know, every house, you know, every other house had some sort of a heter or exception because they were in school or they were working, and all of a sudden, you know, half the people in the Haredi communities had internet. I think in Eretz Yisrael it might still be different, but even there I think it's making inroads. So now, what did they do? So they've changed their approach. Instead of banning internet altogether, they say they ban unfiltered internet. You can have internet if you need it. You know, they still recommend not to use it because of the dangers. But if you really need it for work or for school, you can use it. but make sure that you put in the proper safeguards and filters and things like that to make sure that that you or your children or whatever the case might be don't fall prey to something that that you don't want to. So that's also, it's a type, again, it's not, we're not talking about in the times of Chazal, where they were making an actual gzeirah that was binding and things like that, but still you see a rabbinic community that tried to institute something and assess the larger population. Perhaps they didn't have, you know, as great an appreciation of the power of the internet, or maybe it was you know, a slight mistake in the assessment of the population, but whatever the case was, they saw over time that it needed to be tweaked, it needed to be modified. And that's what the rabbis saw here as well. They made this gzeirah pas, but it didn't catch. It didn't catch everywhere. In some places it caught, and some places it didn't. And continues the tour of a kasav Adoni Avi Arashza. My father, the Rosh, writes, V'alzeh somchin ha-gidolim she'einan osrin oso libnei medinasa. He says, we find many great rabbis who allow their people, their communities, to partake of pasaku. How do they allow such a thing? Right? It's prohibited. It's a Mishnah. So says the Rush, that's what we rely on. Shenoagin boheter, kim omrim shehei me'amakom ha-shelo pashad yisuro sham. They say that their claim is that the Isser, the prohibition, never made it here. Right? It never caught in this location. If there's a location where everybody adopted the prohibition, everybody adopted the decree, so then you're bound by it. But if there was a town or a city or a country where this prohibition was never adopted, right, and it kind of fell by the wayside, so then these rabbis of those places are coming out and saying that there's no necessity to abide by this prohibition. Okay. Okay, you bring some other kulas about Pas Akum. Okay, let's skip down to the last paragraph in source number 7, actually the second to last paragraph in source number 7, and he brings an interesting discussion here. He tries to make a distinction between two different types of Pas Akum. Two different types of Pas Akum. Meaning you have sometimes, you have a person who baked bread in their personal kitchen. So my non-Jewish neighbor, very nice lady, and she baked bread in her non-Jewish kitchen, and let's say she... you know, I koshered her oven for her. You know, let's say it's a brand new oven. There's no questions. She only used flour and water. There's no kashrus shilas. No kashrus shilas. But it's pasaku. Or is there a distinction between that and bread that's baked, let's say, in a non-Jewish bakery? Let's say we have a non-Jewish bakery. Are there any discrepancies? So comes the tour in that second to last paragraph, and he writes, "Uladas Adoni Avi Arosh Zal." Again, according to my father, "Ein chiluk bein pas." Shel bala ba'is l'shel palter. Palter means a baker. There's no distinction between bread that's baked by an individual and bread that's baked by a baker. Aval k'tzas me'amachabrim chilku bein shel bala ba'is l'shel palter l'shay chas l'sele b'shel bala ba'is. So some, he says, even though my father, the Rush, did not distinguish between them, but there are those authorities who do make a distinction between these. And he says it's very logical. Why is it logical? Because if the whole concern of Pas Akum is that we're worried about intermarriage, so if it's my neighbor and I have a little boy and she has a little girl, okay, we could be concerned about intermarriage. But if it's from a bakery, what concern of intermarriage? When I go into a bakery and I buy bread from a bakery, that's not an intimate food setting. I'm just buying their produce that they bake in a commercial way. In fact, we saw that Rav Avadia Yosef actually uses this idea when it comes to Bishul Akum. He doesn't use it by itself, but he combines this with several other things for to be lenient in certain cases of Bishul Akum. But when it comes to Pas Akum, this is mentioned. Hilkach asru bechol inyan chutz mi b'makom sakara, and he says some did distinguish. Aval shel palter ein kan kol kach kiruv das shebu umnuso hu osik. You have a baker; he's baking in his bakery. He's not thinking about the people that come into his store. He wants to, it's a business. He wants to sell bread. So he's not striking any sort of relationship or being too friendly or too congenial with the people that come in. It's a business. And he writes, V'chein mechalek b'Yerushalmi shemate liknos mi palter shel ovdei gilulim b'makom she'ein palter Yisrael. And he says that's what the Yerushalmi allows. Now it's interesting because the Yerushalmi only allows it if there's no Jewish bakery. So if you would ask the Yerushalmi, if I live in a town where there's a Jewish bakery and a non-Jewish bakery, so the Yerushalmi would say you have to go to the Jewish bakery. But let's say I live in a town where there is no Jewish bakery, there's only a non-Jewish bakery, so then the Yerushalmi would say we can be lenient with the bakery, not with individuals, not with Pas Akum per se when it comes to individuals, but when it comes to a non-Jewish bakery, if there's no other bakery in town, so then says the Yerushalmi, that's okay. Comes the Rashba and is even more lenient. because of Harashba, afilu yesham palter shel Yisrael. Even if you have a Jewish bakery there, im ein hapas shel palter Yisrael kepas hapalter shel ovdei gilulim muter. Listen to this. Says the Rashba, even if you have a Jewish bakery, but let's say the bread is not as good. The non-Jewish bakery bakes really good bread. And the Jewish bakery, you know, okay, the ragalach are good, but, you know, the bread that they bake is not so great. Challah, you know, okay, the challah is good. Right, rye bread, you know, all the specialty breads are not as good. So writes the Rashba, you could be lenient in that case also. Kevan sha'arev alav yoser. He writes, ve'enira ken mina Yerushalmi, doesn't seem to imply that way in the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi only seemed to permit it in a case where there was no Jewish bakery. So we seem to have this machlokas here. On the one hand, we have a Yerushalmi, which seems to indicate that the only heter for a non-Jewish bakery is when there is no Jewish bakery in town. And the Rashba seems to be more lenient and says, no, even if there is a Jewish bakery, but if you prefer the bread that was baked in the non-Jewish bakery, then you're more than welcome to partake of that bread. Okay. Now, it's interesting. If we think about how we paskin, so if you look at source number 8, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, and he writes, Yesh Mekomos. Oh, I'm sorry, it's 6? Yeah. My numbers are off?
No,
oh, you know what? Okay, I may have a different, I'm using different notes, so I apologize. The numbers are off. I think I had more sources in this one. This one's 3 pages, and yours is only 2, so that's why. Okay, so source number 6, thank you. The Shulchan Aruch says in source number 6, Yesh Mekomos, Shemekilin V'davar, V'lokchim Pas Minachtum Ha'oved Kochavim. Right, so he writes, there are some places that are lenient when it comes to Pasakum, and they purchase from a Nachtum. What's a Nachtum? A baker. Right, so he's talking about a baker. Again, not an individual. We're not allowing you to eat your baked goods from your neighbor, you know, who baked it in kosher kalim, that we're not allowing. But from a nachtum, from a bakery, that we're going to be. He says there are those places that are lenient. B'makom she'ein sham nachtum Yisrael, which sounds like the Yerushalmi, only in a place where there are no Jewish bakeries. Mipnei shehi shas hadchak, because it's a shas hadchak, it's a pressure situation. Pressure situation? Why is it such a pressure situation? So if you look at the shach in source number whatever, the shach 7. Thank you. Okay, so if you look at the shach in the next source. So the Shach writes that how come we don't have this when it comes to Bishul Akum? You know, we don't say when it comes to Bishul Akum, there's no heter in Shulchan Aruch that says that I can buy from a restaurant. You know, let's say I have a restaurant that makes kosher food. You know, so okay, so Bishul Akum, what's a big deal? But it's a restaurant, it's a commercial setting. We don't say that, right? Well, we prohibit Bishul Akum even when it comes to commercial settings. So what does the Shach write? So he writes, "V'lo dami l'shlakos." It's not similar to shlakos. The lo nagu heter b'shul makom. When it comes to bishul akum, we don't have any of these heterim or leniencies. Why? The alapas yichye ha'adam. And this is something we can't relate to really in the 21st century. People live on bread. Bread is a staple of the diet. V'shayich beitayim ad Yerushalmi d'chayei nefesh. He writes, "This is something that's so important for people." People to have bread that's available, that's good, that's the staple of their diet. So we can't come and prohibit something that's going to be such a lack in their diet. Yeah.
So I have 2 questions. One, so could we rely on this when we're traveling? Like if we're traveling, I don't know, in Europe or somewhere.
Well, okay. I mean, we'll talk about it in a minute. That in general, we're pretty lenient with Pasakum. I mean, we eat Freihoffers.
I don't know what that is.
We eat. You go to the supermarket and you buy bread, yeah. Right? So that's Pasakum. That's pas palter, meaning that's bread that was baked in a non-Jewish bakery. We do rely on this, even if you're not traveling.
But it wouldn't say OU on it.
That's the distinction that I made before, right? Entenmann's is pas palter. Yeah. It's pas akum, meaning it's pas that's baked by non-Jewish bakeries, right? So why does it have an OU? All the OU tells you is that the ingredients are kosher, right? There are no treif ingredients in Entenmann's donuts, right? But that doesn't mean that it was baked by a Jew. It's likely that there are no Jews at all in the plant, right? The Jews, even from the OU, you know, they're not, even in these big plants, the Entenmann's plants and baked goods and things like that, where there's a very small likelihood of treif ingredients being mixed in, they pop in once in a while. They're not there every day even, right?
I think what you mean maybe is that there are people who go to, I've heard of this, mm-hmm. There are people who go on vacation to France, for example. Or used to.
Right.
They would say the real artisan bakeries in France.
Right.
They make just, or the bread stores. Just right. Make bread. The bread is only.
Oh, that's
flour
what you meant.
And
okay.
Water.
Okay. Right.
There's no sugar
right.
in it. There's
right.
no raisins in it.
Right.
So why we can eat it?
Okay. So again. So technically speaking, and this is really a broader kashrus question. Okay. If you roll back 200, 300 years, where there was no OU, Chaf K, you know, I mean, not even 200, probably even 100 years, right? When was the OU, when was the OU started as a kashrus agency? 100 years ago?
Maybe.
Saying, I'm sure your grandparents, not you, but your grandparents, right? I'm sure your grandparents didn't have all the kashrus symbols that we have today, you know, if they had any. Okay, in some countries, by the way, even till today, they don't have all the kashrus symbols that we had. So what do people do? They read the ingredients, right? We've spoken about this. So technically speaking, if you can verify that the ingredients are kosher, okay, and you can verify that that let's say the kalim that they use are not treif kalim, okay, let's say you have a bakery and all they bake is bread, that's it, flour and water, that's it. They don't bring any other ingredients into this bakery. So if you can verify that, technically speaking, that would be paspalter, right? That would be paspalter. The only thing that we're concerned about nowadays. And again, I'm not saying that you can't, if you're, you know, out in the boondocks somewhere and you can verify that for yourself, then maybe you can rely on this, you know, in this case of paspalter. The only thing we're concerned about, especially with the more commercial you get, so then the more complicated the ingredients are. And that's one of the pitfalls of people reading ingredients. I told this story about the casein at one point, right? When you read ingredients, I myself did it, you know, you read ingredients and you think, oh yeah, you know, there's nothing treif in here or nothing dairy in here or whatever the case is. Meanwhile, you don't know what 60% of those ingredients are. So you have no clue if they're, you know, of animal origin, plant origin, you know, you have no idea what you're reading. So that's really the problem with people reading ingredients. But technically speaking, it could work. You know, as things have become more and more commercialized, the necessity for kashrus agencies has also grown, you know, because, you know, to mirror that. But technically speaking, you know, yeah, you could rely on it. There was, when I was studying for my year in Israel, there was a place in Geula, which is the heart of, you know, of Haredi Yerushalayim, okay? It was called Hadar Geula. Okay, Hadar Geula. And they sold cholent and kugel and, you know, like all the good Shabbos takeout foods. And there was a Bubba and a Zayda that were there behind the counter. They made everything. And there was no heksher. The place didn't have a heksher. Because they said, what do we need a heksher for? If you would eat at my house, you could eat at my restaurant. Well, I cooked everything. Right? They didn't have non-Jews working there. It was all them. You know, maybe they had their grandchildren or like little Israeli kids helping them, whatever, you know, whatever it was. So there was no heksher. And everybody used to go there, you know. Since then, it has gotten there was pressure put on them to get a heksher again because you know again we tried to standardize things. So that was part of the reason. But technically speaking, you're right. Yeah.
There's a very well-known cooking school on Coney Island Avenue between I and J that everybody eats by.
Mm-hmm.
It's owned by a Lubavitcher family. They own the Jewish bookstore right downstairs. They cater for everybody.
Uh-huh.
They have no heksher.
No heksher, right?
So.
So again, yeah.
He goes there for like a night out. They have
right.
classes.
Right, right. Yeah, so, you know, again, as, you know, you trust the people. As things get more complicated and, you know, and you hear stories, and then you lose that trust a little bit sometimes. But, yeah.
Is there a general prohibition about eating with a non-Jew, associating with a non-Jew, not having your children play with a non-Jew?
Okay, so the answer...
Not going to school with a non-Jew.
Right, okay, so the answer is no. Drinking there is, right? Drinking there is. When it comes to drinking alcoholic beverages, when it comes to drinking, maybe we'll talk about that next week. When it comes to drinking, too late, right?
Too late.
I know.
Very
important.
It's a big problem, yeah. Yeah, right. So drinking is an issue. Maybe we'll talk about that next week. Drinking is an issue. But other than drinking, there is no prohibition. It doesn't say anywhere you're not allowed to associate with non-Jews. And we don't believe that. We don't believe that you're not allowed to associate with them. We can be friendly with them. You know, we're just, you know, there's a certain point where we're worried that too friendly is problematic. You know, I think we recognize the balance between being friendly and a little bit too friendly. And Chazal, the way that Chazal understood this, or the way that Chazal felt that they could... you know, kind of nip things in the butt a little bit, was that if we cut off, you know, these you know, meetings over food, you know, we cut off bishulakum and pasakum and things like that, so that will alleviate part of this problem of the intermarriage concern. Because there's always going to be a barrier. Even if they're making us kosher food, there's always going to be a barrier. There's going to be a natural built-in barrier that even if we're being friendly and we're being cordial, which we should be, but there's still something, you know, there's something that tells us that we're different and we can't mix too much. You know, so that's but there's no general prohibition, and I don't think Chazal wants there to be. It doesn't say anywhere you can't talk to non-Jews, chas v'shalom, right? We don't say that anywhere. You can't associate with them. Of course you can. You can work with them, and you can go to school with them, and you can associate with them. They can be your neighbors, and you should be a friendly neighbor. Make a kiddush Hashem, you know? It's just that Chazal wanted to create a certain barrier, and this was the barrier that they chose when it came to food. Okay. So that's the reason why. And again, in the 21st century, where we are not so... You know, bread is not really the staple of our diets anymore in the 21st century. People have bread. You know, there are still some people, myself included, who have that, you know, who have that sandwich for lunch every day. You know, you have like the sandwich for lunch guys every day, but, you know, or like the bagel for breakfast type people. So, you know, you still have some people who still have bread as part of their diet. But it's not like people are washing three times a day anymore the way that they did. You know, people used to wash three times a day. There wasn't any question about making 100 brachos a day because everybody was benching three times a day. You know, it was, you know, people don't do that anymore. You know, people don't wash three times a day. Even if you wash, you know, max, you're going to wash once a day. Dinner, no, who has bread with dinner? Unless you're eating a sandwich or you're having a shawarma and a pita, you're going to wash. Otherwise, you know, nobody has bread for, you know. If you go to a restaurant, they have bread on the table. So, you know, but that's it. You know, so, but that's what the Shach says, that's the idea behind this. Now, going back to the Shulchan Aruch and the previous source, in source number 6, he does mention the Yeshomrim of the Rama in parentheses, the Yeshomrim of the Rashba, that he's lenient, even if you have Pas Yisrael around, right, even if you have a Jewish bakery around, still the Rashba was lenient to partake from a non-Jewish bakery if the bread was better. But the Shulchan Aruch writes very clearly, Aval Pashal Balei Batim, Ein Shamishim Oreba Lahakel. Right, just going to your neighbor and having that bread that they baked for you, again, even if it's kosher ingredients, that nobody's matir, nobody allows that. So that's still in effect today, right? That element of Pas Akum, to have things that were baked by a non-Jew, even totally kosher, even in your oven, right? Let's say they came into your house and they baked in your oven with your kalim, but they baked everything and they did it from start to finish, and we'll see in a minute how you can be involved and maybe obviate that. But if they did it from start to finish, right, you came home and all of a sudden, you know, I came home and my babysitter says, look, I made, brownies and, I took the mix from your pantry and I used all of your kalim and everything like that. It's still, I can't eat it. It's pasakum. Okay? Okay. Now the Shach writes in the next source, in source number 7, so he writes that because we're lenient when it comes to bread, right? They already were allowing you to buy bread from a non-Jewish bakery. That's leniency number 1. So we had a little bit of a dispute: is it only if there are, you know, if there's no Jewish bakery around, even if there is a Jewish bakery? But he writes because bread is a staple of our diets, I'm gonna throw in, and no pun intended, another leniency into the mix. What's the leniency? If you look at the second line of that Shach, he writes, "Umehai taima hikilub nami bepas hashlochas kisa." Another heter when it comes to pas is that if I take a stick, and I throw it onto the fire, again, assuming it's a wood fire, right? So I have a wood fire, that's how they're baking the bread, and I take a stick and I throw it onto the fire, so that increases the flame, even just a drop. That's okay. Similar to what we learned when it came to Bishul Akum, right? Similar to what we learned when it came to Bishul Akum, that as long as you are involved somewhat in the cooking process, that's okay, right? We said, as you know, even if you turn up the heat. Now this turning up the heat really comes from Pas Akum. The Rama borrowed it by Bishul Akum, and he said that by Bishul Akum that also works. If you turn up the heat, that also works by Bishul Akum. If you remember, the Shulchan Aruch was not in favor of that. Just turning on the fire, turning up the heat doesn't work for the Shulchan Aruch when it comes to Bishul Akum, and that's why we mentioned that Sfardim are much more machmir, right? When sometimes if you have Sfardim at an Ashkenazi affair, the Frum Sfardim, they'll go into the kitchen to like give a stir to the pot or something to make sure that for them it's called Bishul Yisrael. But when it comes to Pas Akum, everyone agrees, we're more lenient when it comes to Pas Akum. Everyone agrees, just turning up the fire a little bit, throwing on a twig, that's going to be okay. It's interesting. Contemporarily, there's a debate about this, but the Star K actually relies on this for Pas Yisrael, and they say there's a light bulb that's in the back of a bread oven that's called a glow light, I think, or a glow bulb, something like that. And if you turn on that light bulb, okay, Rav Heinemann holds that that's the equivalent of Ashlachas Kisam. Right? You've added a minute amount of heat to that oven, even though it's right, it sounds almost like funny because it's, you know, the oven's at 350 or whatever it is, and you're turning on a light bulb, what's that gonna do? But there's something. There's some heat emanating from that light bulb, and that amount of heat, says Rav Heinemann, not everyone agrees to this, but Rav Heinemann says that amount of heat, that's all we need is a little bit of heat. Add it in, you're involved somewhat in the baking process, and that's gonna make it okay. Right, so certainly if my babysitter is going to bake me brownies, certainly if I turn on the oven, that would certainly be okay, right? Or if she turns on the oven and I put the brownies into the oven, that would certainly be okay. But even if not, even if I just come and I, you know, raise the heat a drop, that would also be okay. That would also make it pas Yisrael in that kind of a case. The Rama allows that by Bishul Akum. Oh. The only thing is, it doesn't, when it comes to Bishul, yeah, but when it comes to Bishul, it's meaning that because you're baking in the oven, so you can deal with the glow light. But if you're talking about Bishul, so Bishul very often is happening in a pot or in a pan, you know, and you're the fire, there's no, you know, I guess theoretically if you cook something in an oven, you could do that, right?
You
know,
you roast chicken,
right? You cook chicken. Right, you're meaning in sauce or something like that. Yeah. So theoretically, something like that, I wonder. It's an interesting question. I assume, I don't know offhand, I assume that he would say the same thing in that kind of a case. You know, why wouldn't...
So does that make him?
I assume so. I don't know 100% when it comes to, you know, the extension to Bishul Akum, but I assume so. Okay. The Aruch HaShulchan in the next source, I guess, do you have the Aruch HaShulchan in source number 8? Yeah? So the Aruch HaShulchan writes... That another reason, perhaps, another reason why we have these leniencies when it comes to pas is not just because, like the Shach says, that bread is the staple of our diets, but he writes also because when it came to Bishul Akum, if you remember, we had really two concerns. We had one concern of chasnus, of intermarriage, and then we had a second concern that maybe they were going to insert some treif ingredients into this into my food. Writes the Aruch HaShulchan that when it comes to pas, that's less of a concern. We don't have as much of a concern when it comes to pas that there's going to be treif ingredients as we do when it comes to bishul, soup or chicken or something like that. Obviously, we have more of a concern treif ingredients are going to be mixed in. But when it comes to pas, we have less of a concern, and therefore, he says that's an additional reason why we're a little bit more lenient. Okay. So it does seem to be the minhag that we are lenient with pas palter, right? With bread that was baked by a non-Jewish bakery, even if we have Jewish bread around, right? Jewish bakery bread around. I mean, right here, you know, you could go to Zamix and buy the bread that they have, but we don't require everyone to go to Zamix or to go to whatever the other bakery is called in Seasons, to go there and buy all your bread from those bakeries. We allow you to go into Stop and Shop or Key Food or whatever it is and buy a regular bread off the shelf. We allow you to do that. So that is based on the Shulchan Aruch, and it's based on that opinion of the Rashba. And if you look at source number 13, I'm sorry, it may not be 13 for you, the Igros Moshe. You see the Igros Moshe? You have it? No, you don't have an Igros Moshe? Okay. 11. Okay, thank you. So if you look at 11, the Igros Moshe, so Rav Moshe writes that he believes that the Rama really paskins like this Rashba, and he writes in source number 11, Umitzad ha'afia heim rak bedin pas akum shel palter shenoagin lahatiraf b'makom shepas Yisrael matzoi. We are lenient, right? Even if you have a place where Jewish bread is available, right? You have Jewish bakeries are around. We're still lenient when it comes to non-Jewish bakeries. He says it sounds like the Rama is paskening like that Yesh Omrim. That's the Rashba, who says we can be lenient with bakery bread, right? Non-Jewish bakery bread, as even if there are Jewish bakeries around. So it does seem that Rav Moshe understood that to be the case, and therefore, based on this, most of us are pretty lenient with pas akum. Again, pas palter in the bakery sense, that we do buy from these non-Jewish bakeries. Now, it is interesting to note that the Chachmas Adam, which I think is the previous source, you have Chachmas Adam there, the previous source. So if you look at the Chachmas Adam in source number 10, he does write, Aval kol bal nefesh ro'i li zaher. He says that a Baal Nefesh should be careful, right? Kevan sheyesh pas Yisrael matzah im lo sheyafa mishal Yisrael. He says, unless it's really better. He says, if it's really better, so okay, so then you can rely on this leniency and you can buy from a non-Jewish bakery. But if it's not really better, if you can get really good bread from Zamix or from wherever, you know, kosher bakery, so he says, really a Baal Nefesh, and again, Baal Nefesh is loosely translated as, you know, one who's scrupulous about his or her spiritual, you know, attainments. So you have to, you know, really says the Chachma Sadam, a person should really be careful. The Aruch HaShulchan also writes that in his city, in his place, where it's underlined, and if you look, I think that's source number 12. You have the Aruch HaShulchan? So source number 12, he writes where it's underlined. V'hinei b'medina aseinu, kulam zehirim tamid bazeh, b'chol hashana b'chol inyan. Everybody's careful. We don't buy pas palter. We don't buy bread that was baked by non-Jewish bakeries. And if you skip to the end, he writes, v'chein nachon la'asos vein l'shanos. He said, that's what we should do. Right? You shouldn't change. That's what you should do. A person should do that. Now again, like I said, you know, our minhag seems to be based on this Rav Moshe, that he believes that the Rama paskins to be lenient, that a person can purchase regular, you know, again, assuming that it's kosher, but can purchase bread baked by a non-Jew, and you don't have to be concerned about this prohibition of pas palter. But if you find people who are strict about it, that this is where it's coming from, and that's why you have many of the restaurants who say, you know, they'll write pas Yisrael for those who are strict about this.
Do we automatically assume that a place like Zamix, who has a wholesale place in Inwood,
right,
and there's 50 Mexican guys
right,
that work there,
right.
That it's automatically pas Yisrael.
So the answer is that Zamix is.
Doesn't give
the correct. So in general, not. But most of these Jewish companies are pas Yisrael. If you, I mean, Zamix, if you look at it, it says, you know, I think Zamix says pas Yisrael. It is. I mean, Zamix is pas Yisrael. But most, if you look at, you know, all of the baked goods, the Reismans and all these companies, all the Heimish, you know, bakery companies are all pas Yisrael. You know, so there. But again, all you have to do is you have to ensure that a Jew is turning on the fire. Once a Jew turns on the fire, you can have the goyim do everything else, and it's pas Yisrael. So that's you know, and certainly if you have a Jewish company where there are Jews around, so a Jew turning on the fire is not such a big deal usually. You know, so that's but generally we are makel. But if you find the machmirim, you'll know where it's coming from. Then the Mishnah Berurah does mention, and I've mentioned this in the past. I don't know what number source this is, but the Mishnah Berurah does say you probably have it there towards the end. The Mishnah Berurah does say that 13. Thank you. The Mishnah Berurah does say that a person should try to be careful on Shabbos and Yom Tov. That even though during the week we have the minhag to be lenient and not to. Not to worry, and we eat pas palter. But the Mishnah Berurah says that the Acharonim write that on Shabbos and Yom Tov it's worthwhile to only eat pas Yisrael. Bipnei kavod haShabbos veYom Tov. Again, I'm not going to tell you that it's usser to eat pas palter on Shabbos and Yom Tov, but it's certainly a nice thing to do. By the way, that would mean that any Entenmann's, Stella Doro, Oreos, all those things would be off limits. Right, if you don't eat them, if you only eat pas Yisrael on Shabbos, because those things are all pas palter, right? They're not pas Yisrael. So that's the question.
Do any of the pas rules apply to matzah either before Pesach or on Pesach? Matzah is not yet pas, I guess. But
so matzah is considered pas, actually. It is.
So all these rules
would apply to that also. Yeah, I feel like most matzahs are going to be pas Yisrael. That's what I feel like. I feel like most, you know, Manischewitz, Schreitz, you know, all these brands are all going to be pas Yisrael, you know. But especially anybody that's making challah or matzah, things like that, which can be used on Shabbos and Yom Tov, I'm pretty sure that they all make it pas Yisrael, you know. But you know, I'm pretty sure that that's the case. So as we've seen from this year, it's not just about Aseres Yemei Tshuva. There are some more sources that talk about Aseres Yemei Tshuva. And basically the theme, the idea of Aseres Yemei Tshuva is that even though throughout the rest of the year we may not be so particular to only buy pas Yisrael, and we'll be lenient and buy pas palter, we'll buy our Freihoffers or Entenmann's or Oreos or whatever it might be. But when it comes to Aseres Yemei Tshuva, because it's a time where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is hopefully Yoshev al Kiseh Shel Rachamim, you know, we want to try to do everything we can to rack up as many Zechuyos as possible. And that's why the Shulchan Aruch already brings that we have a minhag to abstain from pas palter throughout the Aseres Yemei Tshuva. But that's not the focus for tonight. The focus for tonight was the question mark at the end, which means not only for Aseres Yemei Tshuva. So that's the that's basically the story with Pas Akum, and Mirza Hashem will pick up next week, maybe on this issue of drinking with Guy. It might be an interesting topic. Thank you for coming, despite the legal holiday.